And so the trait that we ended up selecting on was, instead of absolute body temperature, it was actually the rate of body temperature change as a function of those environmental conditions while considering time of day, because we know time of day can also contribute to body temperature due to things like eating events or activity, for example. And so by selecting on this trait, we identified that our more tolerant animals have a reduced rate of body temperature increase as those environmental conditions tend to go up.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
DietForge.ai, AI-powered feed formulation with non-linear ingredient modeling and real-time collaboration. Finally, modern software for modern nutritionists. Summer challenges finish your pig performance. Digestrum Finish can help. Learn more at dsm-firmenich.com/finish. Adiseo provides programs and services to help producers achieve their targets in high-quality, safe, and sustainable way. SUNY, we provide value-added biotech solutions.
Hi there. Welcome to another episode of the SwineIt podcast. I'm Tara Donovan, your host, and today I'm excited to have Dr. Jay Johnson as my guest. Dr. Johnson is an associate professor of animal welfare and stress physiology at the University of Missouri. Welcome to our show, Dr. Johnson.
Well, thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Absolutely. So Dr. Johnson's research program integrates stress physiology, nutritional physiology, and applied ethology to improve livestock husbandry practices in ways that enhance animal health and welfare while maintaining or increasing producer profitability. A major focus of his work is mitigating heat stress in swine production. He's published more than 100 peer-reviewed articles on this topic. And so today, he leads us in our discussion topic of genomic selection for thermotolerance in pigs. But before we begin, Jay, will you take us through your career path and what got you interested in this area of research?
Sure. So my career path actually begins here at the University of Missouri. I did both my bachelor's and master's degree here. Mostly worked in beef cattle, but still in the area of heat stress and fescue toxicosis. Did a lot of work in environmental physiology. And so really understanding the interplay between that environment and how those homeotherms are going to interact with that. After that, I moved on to a PhD at Iowa State University, really transitioned more into nutritional physiology. And so did quite a bit of work with prenatal heat stress exposure and how that impacted the bioenergetics of pigs as they reached those different postnatal stages of life. During the process of my education, I'd always sort of noticed that there's a lot of behavioral changes in these animals that I thought might explain some of the physiological differences, but I didn't really know how to quantify that. And so I sought out a postdoc at Purdue University in the area of applied ethology. And after that, I was with the Livestock Behavior Research Unit at Purdue University for about 10 years, ending my tenure there as the research leader, before starting here at the University of Missouri in July of 2024.
Great. Yeah. So, kind of different areas, but all going together into this topic. And
Ben Century is the global leader in animal feed supply chain management, monitoring tens of thousands of feed bins daily. Our technology helps pork and poultry producers, as well as commercial scale feed mills, enter a new era of increased efficiency, lower costs, higher profitability, and improved employee safety. We transform how our customers run their operations by replacing feed inventory, guesstimates, and ineffective manual processes with rugged 3D sensors and software powered by artificial intelligence. The Ben Century operating advantage is clear, and it's why we're trusted by some of agriculture's biggest names. Learn more by visiting www.binsentry.com today.
So start us off today. So again, we're going to talk about genomic selection for thermotolerance in pigs, but start us off by what you mean by thermotolerance.
So really the textbook definition of thermotolerance is the ability of an animal to maintain euthermia or normal body temperature under challenging environmental conditions, right? And so sometimes I think depending on who you talk to, they may have a bit of a different definition of thermotolerance. Perhaps in the production world, you may say, well, the ability of that animal to maintain normal production under challenging conditions. But from our perspective, we really think these things need to integrate together. That animal needs to be able to maintain homeostasis, have improved welfare under those conditions, while also maintaining that those production outputs.
Yeah, great. Thank you for that, because I think that's important for our topic today. So we're also going to kind of go back to the basics, I say, at the beginning of this conversation. So how about genomic selection? So just, you know, give us kind of a path in swine production, right? Some of our audience definitely will know, you know, all about this, and other people will know what it is, but maybe just need a little bit of a recap.
So I will preface this by saying that I'm a physiologist, but I do work with a really good geneticist, Dr. Luis Brito at Purdue University. And so beginning probably 8 or 9 years ago, he and I started talking about the possibility of, you know, selecting for thermotolerance, but really making sure that as we're doing this selection, we're considering that animal's welfare state and overall health. And so as we think about genetic selection, right, so trait measurement and selecting based on those observable phenotypic traits, as technology's improved, we're able to get, you know, genomic sequencing on these animals, we're now essentially able to associate some of these phenotypes that we can directly measure with specific genomic regions. And then as we move forward, instead of having to continually phenotype animals for selection, we can instead just utilize their genomic information for that selection moving forward.
So what are the phenotypic differences that you've observed in the more tolerant pigs relative, you know, to a regular population? So what, you know, you talk about the phenotypic traits.
Yeah, so I kind of want to start at the beginning, right? And so when you talk about selecting for thermotolerance based on this really textbook definition of maintaining body temperature, sometimes you get a little bit of pushback on that, right? And so this is really because when we're selecting for thermotolerance based on an absolute maintained lower body temperature, what we're inadvertently doing is actually selecting against metabolic rate in that animal, right? And that's because as homeotherms, we actually utilize the calories that we consume in order to maintain body temperature. And so when we think about balancing in these extreme environmental conditions, there's always this balance between the heat gain through those metabolic processes, things that contribute to milk production in a dairy cow, litter growth in a gestating sow, for example, with the ability of that animal to actually lose that body heat through things like sensible or latent heat loss or even behavioral changes, right? And so if we're selecting an animal simply based on an absolute body temperature response, we're generally going to see a decrease in some of these productive measures, right? Which makes this, you know, a selection technique that we really don't want to see in our industry, because then we're going to have profitability decline and production deficits, at least under normal conditions, thermoneutral conditions. What we do instead is we try to identify a trait that would instead select for heat loss capacity of these animals, right? And so as we think about a pig, for example, that is being exposed to gradually increasing temperatures over time, it's getting more of a challenge, right? It needs to employ more and more of these heat loss mechanisms to balance out that internal body heat, right? And so the trait that we ended up selecting on was, instead of absolute body temperature, it was actually the rate of body temperature change as a function of those environmental conditions while considering time of day, because we know time of day can also contribute to body temperature due to things like eating events or activity, for example. And so by selecting on this trait, we identify that our more tolerant animals have a reduced rate of body temperature increase as those environmental conditions tend to go up, right? So if we go from, let's say, you know, 60 degrees Fahrenheit up to 95, right? So the slope of that line is lower relative to our sensitive lines of animals. And so what we believed we were doing was selecting for an animal that more effectively was able to utilize some of those heat loss mechanisms. And so after developing that founder population, we selected the most divergent animals in that population, and we started the process of breeding for divergency and actually doing some phenotyping. What we found is that the animals that we've selected to be more tolerant, they tend to increase respiration rate at a much lower temperature. And we see a lot of behavioral shifts in these animals as well. And so at a lower temperature, they'll start ramping up their respiration rate, which again is a major heat loss mechanism in our pigs, which allows them to essentially delay that rise in body temperature. We also see some indicators of changed behavior, things like playing with their water, right? They start making wallows in their pens more quickly and more effectively relative to our sensitive line animals, right? And so if we think about a pig that maybe you have in the wild or on pasture, right, you'll generally see when it's hot, they're gonna form a wallow. And this is a major form of heat loss for pigs, as they're really, really good at behavioral thermoregulation. Really, you know, they're very intelligent, as we all know. And so what we see then is that under these heat stress conditions, you have a delay in this increase in this body temperature relative to the ambient temperature, but we're not seeing production deficits, right? And so if we have gestating sows that are selected for thermotolerance, we see an increase in live born per litter when they're gestated under heat stress. We even observe that the offspring from these animals, if we raise those offspring even under normal conditions, they're going to outperform the animals from those sensitive lines. They grow faster, they eat more, they have better feed efficiency in these production systems as well, right? And so our goal here was to really select an animal that can better maintain euthermia without having negative impacts on that those production outcomes. And what we're actually finding is that we're able to help them maintain euthermia, but we're actually getting some improvements in those production outcomes.
Really interesting. Well, you touched on a question that I had for you as you were sharing that with us. Is your research focused on, you know, heat tolerance in the sow, you know, gilt and then the sow, or in, you know, grow finished pigs? And it sounds like it can be applicable to both.
Sure. Yeah. So most of our research is focused on that sow herself, right? And so, you know, through the years, we've, you know, done quite a bit of research on things like in utero heat stress, right? And so over the last 13 to 14 years, we've published multiple papers on this topic. And what we see is that the environment that that gestating sow is exposed to during that gestation period can have direct long-term negative effects on those offspring that have been developed, right? So even if you get that sow to farrow, you get those piglets through weaning, we see a variety of different changes, things like reductions in growth rate in those animals, decreases in feed efficiency, reduced reproductive efficiency, particularly in our boars. We even see differences in how they behave. They become more aggressive with social interactions and more lethargic after normal production events, things like weaning and transport. And so our focus has really been on that gestating and lactating sow, because we know that her experiences and how she responds to stress not only impacts her in that moment, but can also have these downstream effects on those offspring that she has generated.
So one of the things that that I thought about is walking through a sow farm, you know, in the heat of summer, we often, as a veterinarian, I'm, you know, looking at sow comfort, right? And if they have a high respiratory rate, you know, I have always thought that is maybe they're uncomfortable, or, you know, maybe they're really hot. It's not the right environment for them. But what I heard you say is these animals that might be more heat tolerant are going to start a increased respiratory rate, you know, earlier with a lower temperature. So maybe that's not a good observation as a veterinarian in terms of understanding that sow.
Yeah. And I think that's probably the easiest thing for us to see, right, is respiration rate. And so it's interesting when I go out and I ask folks, you know, what indicates heat stress in a pig? And 9 times out of 10, I'll get the response of respiration rate. And that's true, right? You know, that sow is entering a phase of heat stress. It's trying to mitigate that heat. But really, the efficiency of that is what's driving the strain response. And so in the world of stress physiology, we talk about a stressor. So that stressor might be the temperature of the barn, for example, and all of those animals are experiencing it. The stress then being the biological response of that animal to that stressor. And then when we start to become really concerned, things that we can that are measurable, we talk about that strain response. And so that strain response differs from animal to animal. And so if we have a pig that is increasing its respiration rate, maybe at an earlier temperature, But that activity and that stress response is allowing that animal to maintain euthermia because it is effective. That's not always a bad thing, right? We want that animal to elicit that heat mitigation process so that its core body temperature doesn't rise into dangerous levels, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good description. So do you, when you're working with producers, do you see anything we should be doing today in terms of trying to mitigate heat stress in our barns?
Well, I think probably the first starting point is, you know, a lot of our management technologies that we have available, right? We have, you know, cool cells and ventilation systems, drip coolers, depending on your system, right? And so another area that we've done a lot of work on is trying to identify when is the best time to actually utilize all the technologies we have available, right? And so if you sort of look through the current guidelines, most of those guidelines are based on data from 30 or 40 years ago, right? And I think we all know that our pigs are much more productive today than they were back then. And so it sort of calls into question whether or not, you know, our guidelines of what constitutes heat stress, where are we setting our high ventilation temperature set points? Should we maybe be moving that back a little bit or even making those systems more robust to handle the amount of BTUs that each of those cells in our facilities are producing? And so as a part of our heat stress mitigation program, right, so we're utilizing genomic selection as one part, but also trying to improve maybe how we're managing or when we're managing those animals under heat stress. And so we have over the past probably 8 years developed, you know, sets of algorithms that are, I think, more predictive of the temperatures our gestating sows would like to be at versus which are those that will cause them to succumb to heat stress. And some of the work that we're starting to undertake here at the University of Missouri is really applying some of that data pipeline for developing those algorithms into our other production systems. So looking at our nursery pigs or grow finished pigs, as well as our market pigs. And so in the next 2 years, we'll be performing a series of studies and doing a lot of research, really trying to update those guidelines as well.
Yeah, that's great. I'm glad that work is being done, because I agree, a lot of the published data for, our welfare, even our, you know, welfare audits, et cetera, goes back 30 years. And so we kind of have a different animal, as we all know, than we did 30 years ago. So let's go back into the kind of the economics of this. What's the implications when you're doing genomic selection or, you know, genetic selection for your breeding stock company? There's a balance, right, for what you focus on. And so dig into that a little bit for me and, you know, how important this is compared to growth rate, compared to, you know, back fat, all the things that we're selecting for, at least in our grow finished pigs. And then, you know, you can also jump into the sow side, right, with litter size and milking ability and et cetera.
Yeah, so economics of heat stress, right? And so I think you could ask five different people and probably get five different answers on what it's costing the U.S. industry, right? And so there's probably two main original sources that you see cited in the literature. One, a really, really comprehensive paper by Dr. St. Pierre in 03, where he had estimated, you know, overall in the swine industry about $300 million per year in losses, right? And this is accounting for everything. There's also a really nice presentation that Dr. Steve Pullman had given in 2010 at the Midwest American Society of Animal Science meeting, where he had estimated about $55 per sow in terms of reproductive losses due to heat stress, right? Really, since that time, there haven't been, at least to my knowledge in the literature, a lot of really robust economic analyses related to heat stress. Some of the best things that I've thought to do is, you know, could we at least get an idea based on inflation rate of what that might be today? And so if we use Dr. Pullman's paper or talk, for example, from 2010, in today's dollars, that's about $83 or $84 per sow per year just due to heat stress and reproduction alone, right? And if you look at the U.S. sow inventory from 2025 from the National Ag Statistical Services, there were about 5.65 million sows in the U.S. And so, you know, extrapolating that, you're probably looking around $500 million per year, really just due to sow reproductive issues alone. But I think this is an area of research or an effort that really needs to be made, something that's very difficult to do, right? Because depending on the genetic source, depending on the location, depending on even the barn setup that you had, you may see a greater or lesser impact of heat stress on those animals. So there's a lot of variability that really goes into those analyses, right? One of the things we hear from producers, though, at least on the reproductive side, is, you know, one of their biggest concerns is mortality and abortions, right? Especially in that late second trimester, early third trimester, the growth of those fetuses start to go up substantially, and that fetal growth really contributes to this total heat load within that sow, right? And so early in gestation, not a lot of growth. The sow can usually deal with it okay, but as she gets later and later, especially into those, you know, July, August timeframe, you know, you put a lot of energy and money into that animal, and then all of a sudden she loses her litter, or there is a death loss from that, right? And that's a huge economic hit.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And, you know, thinking back to, you know, the wide range, right, you know, we have four seasons, right, in most of the states where pigs are produced in the U.S. But, you know, we, from the northern climates to the southern climates, there's a big difference in the amount of, I would say, days that pigs might be experiencing heat stress. And so to focus on that in the U.S., I think it's just difficult because there's such a wide range and different universities, you know, are studying different things. We also have, you know, cold stress. I live in Wisconsin. And so, you know, a completely different type of stress on a pig, but it's definitely there in the utilization of the metabolic, you know, nutrients to keep those pigs warm. Completely different thought process. So it is challenging because we do have a wide variety of areas where we produce pigs and that climate's different.
Yeah, and that variation too can really have a negative impact, right? If that sow, you know, doesn't really have a chance to adapt or acclimate, if you're constantly getting these wide variations in temperature shifts, you may even see more negative effects than on an animal that's being exposed to more of a constant heat stress and is able to acclimate to that too, right?
Definitely. Yeah, we always talked about, you know, the first really hot spell is when we see the highest sow mortality. And it's because, you know, it's not a gradual thing. We happen to go from spring to summer in a very short period of time in a lot of states. And so that couple of week period, we definitely see a spike in our mortalities. So, Dr. Johnson, today we've been discussing genomic selection for thermotolerance in pigs and understanding how this can benefit pig production, digging a little bit into the economics, but it sounds like we need to do a little bit more to understand that in today's dollars. So, Dr. Johnson, do you have some final thoughts and take homes or something we didn't cover in our conversation that you want to cover now?
Yeah, I think one other thing, maybe touching on the economics, right? I think postnatal heat stress itself is obviously an issue, right? Those are things we can directly see, you know, death loss, production loss. And so the economics of that, you know, are likely even higher than we currently think they are. Perhaps one underlooked area would also be the economics of that in utero heat stress exposure on those piglets, right? You know, it's very difficult in a farm setting to make a lot of direct comparisons by season, because you would need multiple seasons. And there's a lot of confounding factors, things like diet quality, disease pressure, things of that nature, right? But, you know, based on, you know, our research and research by other labs on the, you know, performance impacts of that in utero heat stress exposure, you know, it may be that the economic cost of that prenatal stress could actually outweigh the postnatal stress, because you're seeing these negative impacts of that heat stress, even in a short 30-day gestation period, throughout the lifetime of that animal, no matter the time of year. And so I think if these economic analyses, and I'm probably not the person to do it, I'm not an economist, but if they are to be done, we really need to consider that factor as well, especially as we think about, is it worth, you know, maybe adding that extra cool cell to your multiplier farm, right? Maybe increasing the capacity for your ventilation system. Do we want to put the investment in there in barn design to prevent that gestating sow from getting heat stressed and avoid some of those downstream consequences on her offspring later on?
Yeah. Yeah. I was thinking, you know, thinking about the guilt production when you were speaking about that, but, you know, also think about boar production, right? So my assumption is that those boars being produced are also negatively impacted by the, you know, by their pre and postnatal stress.
It's time for our famous three.
Biofractal is your AI-driven partner for understanding what's really happening inside chicken biology and turning those insights into action. Using scientifically validated methods, the industry's largest transcriptomic datasets, and proprietary biological indices, our savvy services turn complex molecular data into clear, practical insights that can be used to make decisions. R&D and technical teams, veterinarians and nutritionists rely on Biofractal to validate modes of action, compare solutions, and troubleshoot performance, accelerating product development in nutrition, health, and genetics, and enabling measurable gains in bird performance and welfare under real production conditions.
Great. Well, thank you so much for that. As we end our time together, I want to say thank you to our listeners. If you have questions or comments, send those through on your podcast platform. Also, if you liked our show, give us a thumbs up or a like, and please share it with your friends. But before I let you go, Jay, a trademark of our show is to ask our guest a few thought-provoking questions to expand our knowledge and keep us thinking. So my first question for you is, what's a book or resource that's your go-to in your area of expertise?
Well, that's a pretty easy one for me, being from the University of Missouri. I would have to say Bioenergetics and Growth by Dr. Samuel Brody, who was a faculty member here in the early, 1900s time period. And our environmental chambers are actually named for him. I would say that would be my go-to.
Okay. So a pioneer in that area. Excellent.
Yes.
So how about a book or resource not related to the swine industry that you recommend we check out?
Well, it's a pretty good one, and I have my students in our stress physiology class read this. It's called Why Zebras Don't Get Ulcers. It's by Robert Sapolsky. And so it really goes through the ways that stress in your own life, either psychological or physiological, can impair different areas, things like sleep or memory, what have you, or even metabolism. It's written in a way that I think is pretty digestible for folks that aren't, specifically stress physiologists.
Yeah, I've never heard of that. Why Zebras Don't Get Ulcers.
Why Zebras Don't Get Ulcers, yeah.
Great, I'll check it out. And lastly, share with us an attribute or characteristic that you feel sets successful professionals apart from others.
Yeah, so one of the things I usually tell my graduate and undergraduate students in the lab is, A, good communication, right? You need to communicate exactly what's going to happen, what's happening, to make sure that everyone's on the same page. And through that, state your intentions, right? Let everyone know what your intention is with either the task you're asking them to do or maybe the question that you have. And probably the most important is follow through, right? If you say you're going to do something, make sure that you actually get it done.
Yeah, I like those. I like state your intentions. I think that's a very succinct way to say, what are my expectations, right? And sometimes that's missing in the conversation. Yeah, very good. Well, thank you so much, Jay, for being on my show. Again, this is Dr. Jay Johnson. We've been talking about genomic selection for thermoregulation and heat stress in pigs. Appreciate your insight. And until the next episode, have a great day.
Thank you.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.